Hi, I'm Chief Bob Vasquez.
And I'm Dr. Jose Lugo Santiago. Welcome to Leaders and Futures. Let us have a new kind of conversation, one about leading as futures emerge, are yet to happen, or plainly need to be reimagined.
Someone has said that the best way to predict the future is to create it. Although it's impossible to predict the future, one thing is certain, you must lead in it. It's time to think differently about leading.
This podcast is powered by the Institute for Leadership and Strategic Foresight.
Let's get started with today's discussion on leaders and futures.
Well, hello, Lugo. Like, you sound like crap.
Hey, Chief.
What a way to start a show.
I know. You know, people thinking.
We need to apologize to our audience because you've been sick, or you say you've been sick. I don't know. I think you've just been drinking too much, but that's okay.
That would have cured
old
this.
Enough.
This guy, that would have cured that. You know, Puerto Rico, you know what they do? People take rum, call it Don Cu, golden rum, and they put lemon, and they put honey in it.
Yep.
And then they mix it all up with something they call agua maravilla, they call miracle water. Yeah. And then you mix it all up, and then you drink it. The next day, I mean, you're doing push-ups. Push-ups, sit-ups, running a mile and a half in record time.
All right. Well, maybe we ought to copyright that or patent it or something. Well, you guys do it already, so it doesn't matter. But anyway, well, I hope you feel better. I guess you're feeling better, but not quite good yet.
Yeah, I'm feeling great. Just I don't sound great, but I'm feeling great. Thank you, Chief.
All right. Good. Good. So we have a different kind of topic that's, I guess, based on the news to some degree, which I don't know. We may argue on this one. But you know, I always win. And that's the topic of leadership fatigue.
Always win.
Always. And I said, I've said this, and I say it in jest, but if you're a leader and you're fatigued, you're doing it wrong. Because leading shouldn't be something that you get tired of doing. But the what's on the news is the Prime Minister from New Zealand, I think, right?
Yeah, New Zealand.
She quit because of leadership fatigue?
For leadership fatigue, yes. Jacinda Ardern, and it's all over the news, right, that she was resigning. And she said, I think what they're quoting, right, is that she didn't have enough in the tank. That's kind of like the phrase that she uses. I think it's pretty admirable that she talks about those things in public, because as we are talking about it, a lot of people are doing that, because how it is with the leader. Everybody expects that you have no difficulties. They always see you on your top shape because you do not want to show any weaknesses in anything, because you are the leader. That may be a misconception, but that's really what happens. And so
the best never rest.
So they say that the best gets tired at one point or another.
Well, and you know what I think, Lugo, and that's the discussion for today. I don't think it's that leading is why you get fatigued. I think it's the management part. And I guess the whole world really, but America in particular, we use management techniques thinking that they're leading, or leadership techniques, and they're not. They're totally different. So when you get I can't even imagine what the Prime Minister of New Zealand has to deal with, but there's a lot of stuff, right? So all that stuff, eventually, I guess it got to her. She didn't have enough in the tank. It overwhelmed her to the point that she quits, which is sad. I don't know the lady, and I don't know if she's good or not. It doesn't matter. But to the point where it can have an effect on you physically. But again, I think it's because that's management, I think, that they're talking about that overwhelms you, not the leading part.
Why would you say that? Because if you think about it, people say leading is from the heart, right? And management is from the mind.
Right.
And so what you're saying is that you're mentally exhausted, but not passionate. You still have the passion so that passion defines the leader, and that passion never gets tired. You just want more.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying? What do you mean?
Yeah, in effect. But here's the deal, because when we think of, we give someone the title of leader a lot of times, and when a person accepts that title, first of all, if you have a title, you're not the leader. But anyway, if you're given that responsibility, we think that we own the whole organization, depending on how the, what the size of it is, you know, 10 people, 20 people, 500 people, 5,000 people. But you're not, there's you, a person, a human does not have the capacity to lead that many people.
Mm-hmm.
They managed that. And that's where, and how do you get to be the leader, Lugo?
Mm-hmm.
By being a good manager most of the time. You do that project, you do those projects, you run that shop, whatever, you manage that to the point that they make you the leader or they call you the leader. You know, the reality of it is only the followers are going to really make you the leader. You can have the title all you want, but if the followers don't follow you, you're not the leader.
Well, you have to be recognized. You got to be recognized.
By the followers, yes. Mm-hmm. But You get that title that now I'm the leader and I'm leading 50 people. Well, good luck with that. You're not going to do it because you're not, a human does not have the capacity to do that. The effectiveness is in leading, and you know my deal being Yaqui, Native American, is four. If you can lead four people who lead four people, who lead four people exponentially, now you're leading 5,000 or whatever it is, but you have, as an individual, as a human, you have the capacity to lead four people. No kidding, lead those four people. But number one, it's got to be the right people, and you got to lead them in the right way and let them do their part. But what happens, I think, with a lot of people is, no, I lead the whole organization, and then real pretty soon you're micromanaging, you're managing, I'd use the M word, And that's what overwhelms you. You got all of this crap going on and you think you're responsible for it. Well, fine, but you're going to burn out. Where if you're only leading those four people who are leading others and managing others, eventually you can do it. But it, you know, there's this, it's like when in the urinals, we know in the bathroom when we're in the urinals, we're talking about how many.
Are we going to have this conversation?
Yeah. We're talking about how many
here,
emails we
I'm
got.
Here with my seatbelt on. Let's yeah. see where this is going. Go ahead.
Yeah. But, you know, we think that he or she who leads the most numbers wins, which is stupid. Mm. That's stupid. You know, and I've always had
the bigger sure, leader, right?
Sure, sure. And yeah, that's not true. It's a bigger way. Manager, maybe, but you burn out. So anyway, and like, you know, in my, I don't know, 30, 40 years, I make sure I have four people that I'm actually leading, mentoring, guiding, relating with everybody. And I expect them to do the same thing. So eventually I'm leading a lot of people. Possibly you could say that, not really true, but nonetheless, I don't get burned out because I'm not worried about 80 people. I'm concerned with those four people. I mean, obviously that you're one of them. So that makes it a lot easier. And then I don't think you're fatigued. In fact, you're looking forward to it. You know, these conversations that we have, we look forward to them because it gives us some time to
reflect,
de-stress, to reflect, to get rid of all the mitote, all that garbage that's happening out there, which is managing, I think.
So I think that regardless if you're leading, in some cases, in some places, they tell you if you get 12 people, if you can lead 12 people, you can change the world. We've seen that. But I will say this. It doesn't matter.
What's the right number? We can argue the right number.
Right. Yeah. But, and I'm just using that as a number. Right. But, you know, obviously we know somebody who had 12, you know, Jesus had 12 disciples and he changed the world. That's what I meant. But, you know, regardless the number, I believe if you have 4 or 12 or 24 or 24, that's already too much. But and many studies have talked about that. I think the leadership span of an effective person considered, according to these studies, is about 14 people. Beyond that, your leadership ability, effectiveness begins to degrade. But also, regardless, I believe if you have 12, 14, 4, you still can have fatigue. And I mean that because you are involved in that person in many different ways. One, mentally, you are involved. You're solving problems. That's what you do as a leader. You're solving the organization.
Wrong, wrong.
You're
wrong,
solving the organization
wrong,
for the future.
No.
Yeah, let me
you
finish.
don't solve problems, Lugo.
Yeah.
You help them solve the problems.
But this is
That's
what happens.
fatigue, you help them, you help them empower themselves so that they can solve the problems. Not you don't solve them, but that's what happens.
So
because
you see
you're the
what
quote
you
leader, now you're the guy having to make all the decisions, which is then you're going to burn out.
So this is what I'm saying. So you see, what you have done is you have just proved my own point. You have proved my point. The point is that you as a leader had to deal with complexity. And part of that complexity is that you have to solve problems for the organization. Part of that is understanding how to use your resources so you can empower people so they can solve problems. All of that, you see, because the problem is always shared. It's not their problem. It's always our problem or ability to move forward opportunity. So, but regardless of how we do that dynamic, that dynamic requires that we be, in some cases, emotionally involved, in other cases, cognitive. And I mean, we are always involved with all senses when we are in a leadership position. We had to have the instinct for the organization and all the people around us. And you are correct. This is the leaders that I have seen.
See, I am correct. You just said that.
You see, and I'm correct too.
I did not admit that.
And so the what happens in here is that each one of us got to understand it. Well, okay, let me go back to that point, what I was trying to say. What I was saying is the most effective leaders that I have seen are those people that are not the technical expert in the organization, right? Because now that person has to depend on the people around them to get the mission done. And that meant that that person had to provide the training if they don't have it. Like, for example, when I was in aircraft maintenance, I had aircraft. You know, I deal with electronics. You know, I could fix electronics and everything, but I do not know anything about hydraulic systems. And so with or fuel tanks. Now, I had to understand the basics of some of those things, but in an aircraft system, there are so many components. So if I knew that I had jet engine mechanics that did not have the training, or I was running, or they were running low, or I made sure they had everything they need, tools, you name it, because I knew I could not do that myself. And the leaders of those particular shops, those people that were under my, you know, leadership, I made sure that their leadership capacities were robust, because I depended on them more than ever. And you see, I believe that makes a good leader. And I saw it a lot in my career, and I still see it, you know, in dealing with organizations, that what happens is when you have a leader that is technically very competent, that person, just like you mentioned, gets worn out because that person is there trying to fix it all because I can, right? Right. And what happens when that leader leaves the organization is weaker because nobody can do the job, right? Because that person was the perfect firefighter, could do it for himself or herself. Right. That's not a good position to be, you know, to put the organization in.
Right. But that happens a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I said, I don't know what percentage, somebody that's smarter than me can come up with the numbers, but often the person is elevated to what we might consider a leadership position based on the management skills that he or she exhibited. And then they were rewarded by, now you're the leader, which is, in a way, I think there's other ways to do it, but nonetheless, that's dumb. Because they can technically do the work, but that doesn't mean they can lead. And again, the people that are going to follow are the followers. And if they don't see that person as the leader, they're going to get the job done, you know, because we always do, because we get paid for it. But they're not going to go beyond that, and that's not going to be effective, you know. So yeah, you'll have a mediocre organization because the quote leader is a mediocre leader. Not that they're not a good person, and not that they're not smart or any of those things, technically capable, but they don't know how to lead. And we can argue whether a person can learn to lead. Again, I think you can learn some leadership, leading techniques. There's a difference between leadership and leading. But there again, that's where the fatigue comes in, I think, Lou, like you just admitted, because I am right and you just made my argument that they're trying to fix everything.
You made
they're
my
trying
argument.
They're trying to fix everything, and they can't. They're not leading. They're managing, so they're burned out. But you're right. Exactly. That's exactly what. That's what I taught you, and that's what you did.
You said those shop leaders.
Those shop leaders, that you're right because I taught you to be right. But that's a good and effective leader who allows the people underneath them. That's not a very good term, but subsidiary leaders to take on the responsibility and do it and get the hell out of the way, Lugo. So, you know, what is it? Micromanagement. Maybe we should talk about that. I never could stand it. I worked for people that were like that and I about killed them. I would have looked good in orange anyway.
You would have gotten in trouble. That would have not been a good, you would have not been labeled as a good leader.
Yeah.
You know? But I think it's good that, that we talk about how do we avoid getting to the point where we as leaders feel fatigued. I'm pretty sure you've met some people that you thought they were great leaders at one point, and then all of a sudden other people describe them as, that person doesn't care. You're shocked or like, what? How? What happened? Right? How do we get to the point? How can we avoid that? If we can talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. Well, and again, it's about not having too much to do. That doesn't mean you're ineffective. That means probably that you are effective because you're not out there trying to do everything. Take care of that core group. And again, my number is 4. Take care of those 4 people who take care of 4 more, who take care of more. And that way, and just like you said, you know, those people will feel empowered and they'll feel valued and valuable, and they'll give you way more than you expect and maybe more than you even know. Because they're part of it. They're part of the organization. The organization, the my boss who represents the organization loves me, so the organization loves me. Bring it on. Bring it on. I will do anything that I have to do to help you, to help the organization, to help me. That's the way it works.
So you have to recognize that you have limits.
Of course, you cannot
do it all. That's a personal recognition. And then you have to recognize who's around you, and you need to begin to recruit.
Mm-hmm.
You recruit the right people also, and there are diverse people around you. So not everybody thinks the exact same way. So then there can be debate about what people see and they cannot see. And then people then, of course, assume the different types of responsibilities that are needed to fill the void where the leader cannot act. And I think that's one way to do that. I think another way to avoid that place is to get a hobby. You know, this is what I mean by that.
Your mind.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. To just do something that is different, because what happens too, and you've seen it, this syndrome, the workaholic, as people like to say, some people, it may happen to you when you're doing something and you are working on it, you know, day and night, and you just get frustrated and then you walk away, take a good night's sleep, and you come back and you're like, or even think about a document, right, that you have been writing, and then you going back another day and like, oh, this doesn't make sense. Right. It made sense when I was writing.
Right.
And so I think, you know, walking away, you know, just taking something to relax your mind and then come back at it. That's also,
and you know, as you say the W word, Lugo, there are a lot of studies that just take a walk.
Yes.
Take a walk, you know, 20 minutes, go somewhere, and especially if you can go outside, not here in Colorado because you'll freeze, but in San Antonio, where the temperatures are always 70 degrees and nice and, and crisp. But go take a walk, you know. And we used to do that when I was working up until about last year. There were 3 of us, 4 of us that would take a walk at 1000 and at 1400 every day. And we did 20 minutes, 30 minutes, just walk, talk, you know, see the cadets and all that. Boy, did that ever re-energize us. Then we could go back and do whatever we needed to do. So, but you're right. We are, The great philosopher Dirty Harry said, "A man's got to know his limitations.
Yes.
You're right. You got to be aware of that. That there's a point where you shouldn't try to go further because you're going to atrophy. So let me do 20 minutes. Let me do 30 minutes. Whatever it is. Let me take a break, and I can come back to it and hit it again. So yeah, that you can avoid these things. But it takes thinking. You know, it takes acknowledgement, like you said, awareness that yes, I have these limitations, and when that happens, this is what I'm going to do. You know, we're going to, it's like some people, they get a cold and they keep plugging away thinking that they're invincible and they sound like crap on the radio or on
the,
you know, so, you know.
But they can just keep on doing it, right? They just keep on doing it.
They just do it badly.
They expect a miracle to happen. It will happen.
Yes. Yes, sure.
That is interesting.
So I'm going to cut it off here. I'm going to tell you, go get you some Ronrico and some lemon and some, what was it,
something,
honey.
Something from La Isla.
La Isla. Yeah. Yes. Take some of that so that you can get back to sounding better next week. Or I don't know, man. But the good thing is it makes me sound better. So
I'm sure next week I'll be, you know, having this handsome voice again. It'll be back. It will be back.
I'll be back. Yeah. We'll see you next week.
We'll see you then, Chief. Thank you for listening. We hope today's topic connected with you and helped you reflect on the work leaders do to get out of a narrow focus on one future and into a broader range of plausible alternatives.
If you'd like to connect with us, find us at leadersandfutures.com.
And if you would like to learn more about leadership and future studies, we have several programs to help you at the Institute for Leadership and Strategic Foresight.
Until next time, be great.